I really want to introduce, it's a new message series that we're starting this morning, and it's called Characters of Faith. And what we're going to be looking at in the next few weeks are biblical examples and lifestyles from Old Testament characters that hopefully will encourage our faith and give us a fresh glimpse of who our God is. And guess what? I get the privilege to start that series with you this morning. And as I do, I'm going to start with a question. And here's the question. Have you ever felt in your life, have you ever felt overlooked or like you didn't matter or like you were passed by, forgotten, or dismissed? Have you ever had one of those moments in your life?
Oh, yes.
Maybe one person? Okay. two, that makes it. For example, like favorite stop is a coffee shop. And some of you that do that know the routine when you go in there. You make your order. They take your name, what you're doing, and then you step off to the side and hopefully get your order, right? And so I go in there, and if you ever go out with coffee, I'm a very simple man in many ways, but my coffee is hot, black, cold, simple. So when I go in, I'll have a house coffee, black, small, simple. Name Charlie, go off to the waiting room. And there's people behind me stepping up. Name, Frappuccino, okay? Next person is vanilla latte. The next person is, cold foam. All right, I'm thinking, man, I got here just in time. Standing off to the side. Now, this happens to me, it seems like, in more ways than one. And I hear these names being rattled off. Frappuccino! And I'm thinking, wait a second, that person was behind me, weren't they? And then cold foam, and then the name, and I'm thinking, that's not my name. And it's like, after a while, I'm thinking, well, maybe they're grinding the beans, and it's taking longer with the machine or something. And then after a while, about the third or fourth person, I think, maybe they've forgotten about me. So I go up and say, I had the house black small. And then I hear someone say, oh, Charlie? Yeah, that's me. Oh, we're so sorry. Here it is. And by that time, no longer hot. And I don't know if you're one of those that goes in the restaurants and you sit down. And for Michelle and I, my wife, I always know when I sit down what I'm going to order. And she's one of those that studies the menu because I think she feels like she's going to be tested on it. And it takes like forever. And I better watch it because she's here this morning. But you ever notice that when you order and you order quickly, and yet other people that come in behind you get their food before you do? You ever notice that sometimes? Does that ever happen to you? Happens to me. And it happened to someone in the Bible, in the Old Testament. It happened to a particular woman who was overlooked, who was minimalized, who was taken for granted, who was forgotten. She was an Egyptian slave. She was treated as property. She was used as a surrogate without her consent. Her relationship deteriorated under her mistress, and she fled into the desert. You know who we're talking about this morning? Any guesses? Did I hear the word Hagar? You couldn't be more right. And to read her story, we're going to read Genesis 16. And this gives us the full detail, and I'm going to just go through these passages, and you just follow along silently as I read aloud. And we start at verse 1 where it says, "Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian slave named Hagar. So she said to Abram, 'The Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my slave, and perhaps I can build a family through her.' Abram," and again their names before they were changed by God, "agreed to what Sarai said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarah, his wife, took her Egyptian slave, Hagar, and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar, and she conceived. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Then Sarai said to Abram, 'You are responsible for the wrong I am suffering. I put my slave in your arms, and now she knows she's pregnant. She despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me.' 'Your slave is in your hands,' Abram said. 'Do with her whatever you think is best.' Then Sarai mistreated Hagar, so she fled from her. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was a spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, "Hagar, slave of Sarah, where have you come from? Where are you going?" "I'm running away from my mistress, Sarah," she answered. The angel of the Lord told her, "Go back to your mistress and submit to her." The angel added, "I will increase your descendants so much that they will be too numerous to count." The angel of the Lord also said to her, "You are now pregnant, and you will give birth to a son. You shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard of your misery. He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand against him. And he will live in a hostility towards all his brothers." She gave this name to the Lord, who spoke to her, "You are the God that sees me." For she said, "I have now seen the one who sees me." That is why the well was called Beer Lahai Roi. It is still there between Kadesh and Berit. So today, in what few minutes we have left, we're really going to learn from Hagar's story and see profound truths that literally transform, I really believe, how we look and see our God, how we see others, and maybe even a fresh glimpse at our own selves. And let's start with the first point, shall we? Let's just dig right in. And we find that in verse 7, the first principle, the first truth. It says, the angel of the Lord, underscore the word found Hagar near the spring. And here's the first point. It's actually quite simple. Our God, and it's a beautiful truth, but yet so simple. Our God is a pursuing God. But make sure that we finish this. He finds us. He knows where we're at. He's good at finding us, just like he did Hagar. And what makes this so beautiful, this initiative, is that who's doing the pursuing? It's God pursuing her. And in fact, if we could say even what initiated this pursuit, was it her attitude? I don't think so. Maybe her status that the angel was seeking her? I don't think so, because remember, she was an Egyptian, not even part of the covenant people. But was it Hagar's prayer? This is really interesting when you think about, again, what initiated this contact. It wasn't even her prayer. Because in Hagar's life, here's a valuable truth, that there's sometimes in our lives, the pain is so great that it steals and robs our vocabulary, where we have no words. And such was the case in Hagar's life. And yet the angel is here pursuing her. And yet what makes this so special, look at verse 7 as well. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring. Where? You see what it says? Where? In the desert. In the wilderness. You know, God's good at finding us when we think we're hidden and we've run far from him or in the wilderness. Maybe there are times that we go through the wilderness, and I can imagine some of us have been through a wilderness in our life. I have. I've been through, and maybe you have too, what we call relational wildernesses. Those are times when we go through a loss of a loved one, and we try to recoup after that, because it's just like finding our way in the desert to find the next steps to take when someone we love is gone. Or maybe there's someone here in a relational wilderness, sitting here, maybe asking yourself this question. Does anyone maybe here know who I am or even my name? There's professional wildernesses. There are some of you, and I've been there. You know, if I only to find out that now here you are, maybe in midlife trying to make a career change and getting your resume together and going through what it's like to start life all over in a new career. There's health wildernesses, dealing with maybe the news that you didn't want to hear from your physician, or maybe the news concerning your loved one, and you're dealing with a whole realm of wilderness, trying to figure out how and what life will be like going through it. Financial wilderness, has anyone ever been there? Boy, we have. when we least expect it, to get those bills or maybe those breakdowns or maybe the condensing unit busting in the house, and you find out what it's going to cost to replace it, and you think, you've got to be kidding. Talk about a wilderness, and how are we going to pay for that? Now, most of all, has anyone been through a spiritual wilderness where you just find sometimes that God is distant, or maybe that you feel like you're going through a desert? And does God really even know where you're at? Has he lost track of you? I'm here to tell you this morning, God knows where you're at. He is a God that pursues us. He is a God that finds us, and he knows exactly where you're at in the midst of whatever wilderness that you're going through. You know, as I think of this, an illustration comes to my mind. Used to be one of my favorite movies. I've seen it so many times, it's kind of dropped down in priority. It's the movie Taken. Has anyone ever seen it? No one? Okay, I have. It's a really good movie, then you need to go home and watch it. If you're a Liam Neeson fan, you're going to love it. There's an iconic phrase and point in the movie. Liam Neeson, he plays the CIA operative, and his daughter wants to go on a trip to a foreign country, and he's hesitant, but she goes, and as she gets there, she's literally kidnapped by some sex traffickers. And she happens to leave the phone on and drops it. And the kidnapper, hijacker, picks up the phone. And Liam Neeson's on the other end. And you know that iconic line? Oh, it's great. Well, I'm sorry. It's a spoiler alert, but here it goes. This is what he says. I don't have a lot of money. I wish I could talk like Liam Neeson. I don't have a lot of money. But I do have a certain skill set. And if you let my daughter go, that will be the end of it. But if you don't, I will look for you. I will find you. I better not say that in church. I guess you get the picture. And in a needle in a haystack, he finds them. Great movie. But even greater is a God that knows where we're at, what we go through. Even when we have no words and we're not the pursuer, he finds us. Beautiful truth. The second point that we need to see through this, it's just profound. It's in verse 7, the angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was the spring that is beside the road to Shur. And he said, Hagar. Underscore Hagar. He speaks her name. This is profound. I put myself, and I try to, and you do too, try to put yourself in her place. When was the last time you think she heard her name pronounced in such a tone of care, of concern, and maybe even that of love, other than, Hagar, you know, take the whatever out, you know? But the point is this, our God is a personal God. He knows you, and he knows you by name. And what's so, again, profound, when you look at this verse, who's doing the talking? The angel of the Lord. You know, many believe that the angel of the Lord is the pre-incarnate Christ, you know, a Christophany that's literally happening here. Of Christ manifesting himself in this form through an angel speaking. And it's just profound again when you think that when there's a message to come to you and to me, God doesn't send it by any other source than by his own lips and his own tongue. So incredible. But if you look at this, look how God reaches her heart. It's incredible how God deals with us. And such a wonderful lesson here. And so much to learn how God ministers and works and deals with us. Look at verse 8. God reached her heart, first of all, through a question. He didn't come down with a command. He didn't come in with a rebuke, but he comes in with a question. Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going? And for some of you Bible students that like to get into particular word studies and phrase studies, here's a word study for you and a phrase study. Look at how many questions that God asked in the Bible. In fact, look at how many questions Jesus asked in the New Testament. Adam and Eve, in the midst of their shame, in the midst of disobedience, God speaks to them. And what does he say? You know the line. Adam, where are you? He knew where they were. Remember the story of Elijah? Remember when he had the showdown with the prophets of Baal on the mountain? Remember what incredible moment of victory that was in his life. And what does he do? He ends up running. And he ends up fleeing so much so that he ends up in a cave. And the angel of the Lord speaks to him. And you know what the angel of the Lord says? Maybe sometimes what he said to you and me. What are you doing in here? Starting that conversation again with a question. Peter, after the denial, saying after the crucifixion of Christ, I'll just go back to fishing. And he's out in the boat, and Jesus is there on the shore. And what's the first words out of Jesus' mouth? Question. Catch any fish? And I think Jesus was so good at that, wasn't he? Who do men say that I am? Why are you thinking those thoughts in your heart? Do you love me more than these? Questions that really deserve good answers, don't they? But God also reached her heart through a command, Hagar speaking in verse 9, return to your mistress and submit to her. Well, you talk about mission impossible. But yet, isn't it true that sometimes God calls us, just like he called her, to do desperately sometimes the things that we want to avoid? True? And he calls us back to those things. Because healing, God knows, sometimes can happen in the places where we're wounded the most. You'll find that out in counseling, I'm sure. I have. And the third, through a promise, I will surely multiply your offspring so that they cannot be numbered. This is how God reached her heart. God is a personal God. Please hear this. He knows you this morning. He knows your name. And I take great pleasure in this because I have a last name that people hardly ever pronounce right. And I think, you know, our ancestors would have been so much better off leaving the K off because I hear it pronounced so wrong when it should be pronounced Blanc. But I hear, hey, Mr. Blank, Mr. Blank. But you know, want to know something? God gets it right. He knows. He knows. The last point I want us to look at, the wonderful point, and it's in verse 11 where it says, the angel of the Lord also said to her, you are now pregnant and you will give birth to a son. You will name him Ishmael. And this is important, hear this. For the Lord has heard. He's heard your misery. He will be like a wild donkey of a man. I'm going to be honest with you. When I first read that, I couldn't help but smile. Mothers, how would you feel in your birth announcement going out, you know, announcing the birth of our son? He will be a wild donkey of a man. I'm sure that'll get some people there at your party. Let's see what they're talking about. Anyways, what it's referring to is that her son is going to be free as she was a slave. He's going to be wild, and he's going to be powerful. He's going to be strong. That's what that's in reference to. But going on in verse 13, and she gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her, you are the God that sees me. You are El Roy, for she said, I have now seen the one who sees me. Here's the last point. Our God is a perceiving God. He sees us. And that idea of seeing is a lot more than just seeing outside exterior appearances. The idea of seeing is like being seen or known, that he literally gets us. Our God, when he says he's our El Roy, in fact, can you say that this morning with me? El Roy? El Roy. Oh, man, that was weak. Try it again. El Roy. That's better. That's better. And maybe the question is to see your El Roy this morning. Is he the God that you know without a shadow of a doubt that sees you? And I know maybe for some of you, that might be kind of alarming because my parents always used to say that to me when I was small. Be careful, God's watching you. And that used to give me the kind of the freaks. But you know what? When you come to know God, that's comforting. I'm never out of his sight. I'm never out of him knowing what I'm going through in my life. Whether I verbalize it or not, But the point is, God sees who you really are. Hear this. Even when you don't, he sees you. You know, a good example of this, let me just give you one here, is the life of Gideon. Remember the story of Gideon when he was kind of afraid of the Midianites, and so he was threshing wheat kind of at night, and the angel of the Lord speaks to him and says, Gideon, you know what? I'm going to raise you up, and you are going to lead a mighty army, and you are going to be victorious. And remember his excuse? Well, if you only knew the family I come from, the least of families in all Israel, and you're calling me to do this? And you know what the angel calls him? I love this. Even before he takes a step in battle, you know what the angel calls him? Gideon, you are a mighty warrior. God sees in us the things we don't see in ourselves. And I'm wondering the lies that we believe because we tell ourselves, and I would just love for God to whisper in your ear this morning who he says that you are in relationship to him. I think it would blow you away. It would blow me away. God sees who you really are. You know, there's a wonderful example in the New Testament that's a shadow of Hagar. That's almost like a duplicate lifestyle and example all the way through. And you know who that is? It's the woman at the well, the Samaritan woman. And if you have maybe a pen or pencil, this is incredible to note the comparisons here. Like draw a column down on one side, put down Hagar, Genesis 16. On the other, put down Samaritan woman, John chapter 4, and listen to these comparisons. Hagar, she was an Egyptian woman, a servant, a slave. The Samaritan woman, socially marginalized, just like Hagar. Hagar, fleeing alone in the wilderness. Woman at the well, alone. Why? Because she couldn't go with the other women during the morning hours. She had to go at the heat of day because that's where women of her lifestyle had to go. Hagar, met by God, the angel of the Lord personally comes and speaks. The Samaritan woman, met personally by Jesus, God in the flesh. Hagar sees her story and God gives her a future and a promise. Jesus, the Samaritan woman, says, I know your story. I know all about you, and offers her living water. Hagar, she names God El Roy. This is the God that sees me. He knows everything about me. The Samaritan woman, she declares, come see a man who told me everything I ever did. Hagar becomes the first person in Scripture to give God a name. God doesn't reject it. He doesn't shun away from it. He accepts it because that's who he is. The Samaritan woman becomes the first person Jesus directly reveals himself to is the Messiah. Hagar leaves transformed with a purpose. God gave her such an incredible promise as well as purpose. The Samaritan woman leaves transformed, becomes a witness to her whole village. Because you see, both of these women really were able to have a transformed life because of a connection and relationship with God and come to the conclusion that God sees who we really are, even when we don't. You know, in closing, I thought to myself, what would it be like if Hagar could come and share a few words with you this morning? Wouldn't it just be unique to say, Hagar, would you like to close this message off with maybe something you'd like to say to everyone this morning? Well, I thought about that and I wrote something. And I really would like you maybe to, if you would, maybe close your eyes and or just imagine you've heard just a little bit of Hagar's life. But just imagine this woman standing before you this morning saying these words. My name is Hagar. You may not know me, but I know what it's like to be invisible, to be used, abandoned, alone in the desert, with no one left to care except God. In my darkest moment, I expected silence, but instead I was seen, not just watched, seen, known, loved, valued, not because of who I was or what I'd done, but because of who He is. He is El Roy, the God who sees. He saw me when others didn't. He came close when everyone else pushed me away. He gave me a future when I thought my story was over. So if you're here today and you feel overlooked, like no one really sees what you carry or who you are, let me tell you something with all the strength in my bones. God sees you. He sees your pain, your faith, your doubts. Most of all, He sees your worth. Don't run. Don't run and hide from Him. Don't believe the lie that you're forgotten. Trust the one who met me in the wilderness. He still meets people there. Let Him rewrite your story just like He did mine.